What were you doing when you were 14, mucking around in the local park, lying moodily on your bed, being embarrassed by your parents whenever you went anywhere with them? How about sitting down to start writing a highly acclaimed and multi-award-winning series of novels? You see, while I was doing the other three, and a bit more besides, Isabel Carmody was doing the novel thing. No doubt she was being embarrassed by her parents as well. But anyway, Isabel's the author of The Gathering and Greylands, but perhaps is best known for her extensive Ober Newton Chronicles. The sixth instalment of this renowned fantasy series, The Sending, has just hit the bookshelves, and Isabel is with me in the studio. Welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks for having me.
Did you find time to be embarrassed by your parents as well? Or?
Well, my father had died when I was young, and I sometimes think that's why I was a writer. But you make me sound like a prodigy, and
yes.
I wish I could say that I was, but it was typical teenage writing, turgid, full of over 17 descriptive words to a sentence, but I rewrote it over a lot of years.
Right.
And so it actually wasn't published until I was in my 20s.
Right, you're saying, so if I'd kept the poetry I composed when I was 15 and 16, it might now be quite good instead of being perhaps the worst poetry ever written.
If you kept rewriting it, it probably would be the best thing.
Right. Okay. What was it like to be published that first time? Because you were still pretty young to be published.
In those days, I was very young. I didn't expect it at all. I mean, when I was 14 writing, I wasn't writing to be published. I thought all writers were dead people, dead famous people. And it was my editor. I was a journalist, and my editor said, "Have you ever thought of getting published?" And that was what made me think of it. I sent my book off to the first publisher of a long list I had made, and it was accepted. And I never got a rejection slip. So that was
people can say that.
I know.
But you started writing at 14, but you were a storyteller before that, because you were telling stories to your siblings, weren't you?
Seven of them. So, and to control, I'd love to say that I was, this heartwarming older sister who told these stories to form their minds, but I was just trying to control, make them behave themselves. So I think I told them horror stories.
Yes. A list of the awards you've won is pretty much as long as my arm, and most recently you were awarded the 2011 CBC Book of the Year for Younger Readers for The Red Wind.
Yeah, that was a special award.
What is it about the writing that you so enjoy?
I think it's, after this long of being a writer, I can't imagine, it's a way you interface with the world, the way you operate with the world. It's not like a job you go home from. Some kid asked me the other day, "When do you think you'll retire?" And I said, "When do you think you'll stop breathing?" Because for me, that's what it feels like. That's what I am to the world, and that's what I am to myself.
Right. That book that I just mentioned, you illustrated that as well.
I did, yeah. That's why it's such a special award, because I don't see myself as an illustrator. I've always drawn. And so to me, it's an extreme pleasure to be allowed to draw at this point in my life and to be awarded by that body who've awarded so many great illustrators. It's a real honour.
Mm. I think you probably deserve the title of an Australian pioneer of fantasy novels. What is it you like about the genre?
Well, I mean, when I was writing it, I was trying to explore. For me, it's a very philosophical genre. The Ober Newton Chronicles is trying to look at, can human beings evolve ethically and morally? I couldn't have said that at 14, but I can at 50-odd.
Yes.
So, yes, for me, it allowed me to explore these great questions. And the tools that I use make me fit for the category of fantasy. But when I started to write, there wasn't even such a category. You know, I would have to ask in the library in a lowered voice for fairy stories because I wanted something fantastical.
What was about? I'm trying to think.
The Narnia books.
And the Diaries of Thomas Covenant had just probably were getting going there too.
Yeah.
But that's almost it, isn't it?
I mean, Lord of the Rings.
The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. A lot of fantasy for kids exists, but in those days it wasn't as much fantasy as the genre is now.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think I was there before the genre was there.
So how do you explain the popularity of it?
Well, I think it does feed, even the worst of it, and there's a lot of bad fantasy.
I bet there is, yes.
Because it makes money, so people think, oh, I can write that. I'll invent a princess dressed as a boy, a stalwart dwarf, an ethereal elf, put them on a road, go and get a magical cup or a sword, and there you have 90% of fantasy. But it should rise. It should allow you to say something real about the world, and for me, that's what it does. That's what it is.
On Life Matters today, my guest is Isabel Carmody, who is the fantasy author. She's been doing it since she was 14, and the latest of her Ober Newton Chronicles, which is book six,
yes,
is The Sending, and it's published by Penguin. And I mentioned that it's book six. There's always pressure, isn't there, from the readers to deliver the next one.
Well, it's only the last few years I've really noticed it, and there's been 8-year gaps between some of the books.
Mm.
And the perception of people is that if you don't hurry up and get another book out, people will stop reading you. I'm case in point that that's not so. If they like it enough, they will wait. And that means they wait long enough for you to write a good book. You don't have to bang one out every single year on the same day. And I want the books to be the best books that they possibly can. But these days, the pressure's unbelievable. I would never imagine that it would get to the point. One of my writer friends said, I'd love your fan base, but I wouldn't like him as mad at me as yours are.
So is that what it's not your agent, it's not the publisher, it's the fans actually making it clear?
Well, interestingly enough, it's the fans and it's the publishers because of the fans. It's not the other way around. It's because they don't like it when those people are really wanting something that they can't deliver. And so both of them will be pressuring me. But Penguin have been very good to me because ultimately they've given me the extra time and they've let me take years sometimes to write a book. And I don't know why. I hope it's because they believe in me as a writer. I mean, what other possible reason
Clearly.
Would there be? They're humouring me.
No, I don't think they do that. So for people who don't know them, though, the Over Newton Chronicles is set in a sort of post-apocalyptic world after its destruction by a nuclear holocaust, and it focuses on the adventures of Elspeth Gordy. It's not exactly light reading. What happens in, briefly, and I don't want you to give away the thing, but what happens in The Sending?
In The Sending, Elspeth, who's the main character, leaves Over Newton, which has been, at one point in the first book, a place where children were experimented on, and at some point in the series, a refuge. And now she's leaving it. And I've already heard from lots of fans that people cry their eyes out when she leaves. I felt very sad because it's the last time she'll ever leave. I felt very sad at that moment too. So for me, that's that and the culmination of a couple of personal or relationship things in the books are what forms the basis of this. She finally leaves she's looking for computer machines to stop them, computers, to stop what happened before happening again, this time decisively and completely, the end of the world. But if you think about it, it's like asking a 14th century person to operate a computer. She can't.
Yes.
She has to figure out a mythology in order to work out what is a key. To a 14th century person, a key is a metal object you stick in a door.
Yes.
But we call a key on a map a key. We call a key on a computer keyboard a key. We say keying in when you key something in. So she has to find a way to operate. I love that.
I do too. I can actually relate to it because although it's much more difficult and complex, sometimes the children do something to the remote control of the television and I can't change it back except by turning the television off and then turning it on again. I mean, the children just pick it up and go, and it's all whatever they want.
When I started to write, computers were the size of a building.
Yes.
I mean, if you think back when computers, they were these fascinating, slightly alarming things that were enormous. And now look at them, the size, you can fit them in your handbag.
I think about 10 people in my year when I finished school in 1981 were doing computer studies. That's it.
Exactly.
I wasn't one of them. Because with Elspeth, is she, because the Chronicles are, in, the end of the Chronicles is in sight, isn't it? I mean, you're going to do, what, 8?
There's one more.
One more.
The Red Queen, and that's the last one, and I'm working on it now.
Right. So how long have you been living with Elspeth?
Good question. It's going to be hard to stop living with Elspeth. It's going to seem really strange to come to the end of that. 30 years.
Wow. You know?
She grew up more slowly than I did. We started at the same age.
Right.
She's grown much more slowly. I wish I'd grown as
How
slowly
old is she
as
now?
She did. She's about 17 or 18 now.
Right.
So in all those years, she's grown.
Looking fabulous.
She doesn't show her age.
Won't it be odd, though? It will be odd to
I can't imagine.
I don't think you'll be able to stop thinking about her. You'll just stop writing about her.
Well, I mean, I have some other possibilities. You know, you can do short stories. When you invent a whole world, there's always narrative paths you don't tread. You only tread the one path that your main character treads. So there's always this temptation. And there's always short stories. I've written 2 short stories so far. So I can always go back for a fix if I'm desperate for the world of Over Newton.
I remember when I was a teenager, I was a big Tolkien fan. And I remember discovering that he had invented really the equivalent of a world. So there was The Hobbit and then there was The Lord of the Rings. But then there was The Silmarillion. And then there were all these other things because he'd actually invented this world. And, and you could keep finding out more about it.
I always wished you'd find a secret book that he wrote. Nah. Don't you wish that when you have an author you really love and they come to the end of a series, you think, why didn't they write one more secret book that someone will find?
Well, yes. Now, you currently live a kind of dream life. A lot of people would be jealous of this, I think, because you spend around about half your time here in Australia on the Great Ocean Road and the other half's in Prague.
Yes, that's true.
Sounds tough, I have to say.
Well, it's a little bit schizophrenic, but in fact it's a fantastic, you know, the Great Ocean Road is so wild and so beautiful and so cold and primitive in some ways. Mm. And Prague, of course, is an ancient city with cobbled streets and a black river cutting through the city, like a castle you can see, little cobbled streets that fill up with snow in the wind. It's like a steampunk fairy tale.
Yes, yes.
Prague.
I'll bet. How do you kind of juggle that? Because you've got your daughter's at school?
Yeah, she's at school right now in the Czech Republic. She's half Czech, my partner's Czech. So she speaks the language. She goes to a local school and is very much linked into that world. But we come back here every year for her holidays and she's just as much linked into life here. So we really do manage to keep... We don't want to lose either country.
Mm. That'll be harder, though, as she gets older.
Yeah, it
wants to do more and more with friends. And
you
like
think
that.
About it, it makes you crazy. You can't make decisions in advance. You have to wait till the moment, see what's there and think, what can we do? How can we make this work?
And how does that impact on your work, the moving between places?
I think it's good for a writer to be always a little bit out of their comfort zone, because when you're out of your comfort zone, you notice more. I mean, if you go overseas, you can't speak the language, you don't quite know how to get your clothes washed or to buy a piece of food, or you're scared you won't be able to get money out, you're more frightened, you're more vulnerable.
Mm.
And being more vulnerable, you notice a great deal more.
Yes, you're vigilant, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think the point of being a writer, it's important for a writer to be outside your comfort zone, because that's when you're going to notice fracturing of reality when
right.
things go
So does that mean that you're more productive when you're in Prague or more productive when you're in Victoria?
It's funny because I'm so at home now in Prague. It's almost to the point where I'm too much at home in both places. So the other travels that I do, which I also do, that's the place. Like I was in China this year, not long ago, and again just recently. And I felt very vulnerable there and on mainland China and in Hong Kong, very much out of my comfort zone. And it's good for me as a writer. So I just think it makes me notice more. It makes me more aware of the world.
You're off after this to go and speak at a school. Do you do a fair bit of that or?
Well, only when I'm in the country, and I like doing it. I like going and speaking to those kids, and I think it's good for me as a writer to be that there at the co-. I don't have like a potted talk. I just stand there and talk and hope you see your audience.
And do they have some fantastic questions? I bet they do.
They do, yeah. And they can really test you. They can also notice things you didn't notice about your own books.
Yes.
I love that. They'll say, I see in this book you did that, and you think, oh my gosh, I did do that.
Yes, because they pay so much attention.
Absolutely.
And they know so
I think
much.
They know more about me.
Yeah.
Sometimes kids will come up and they'll quote me to myself, and I sometimes don't recognise the quote. I must look like a nong.
Yes, my son does that, and I believe I do look like a nong. It's been great having you in. Thank you very much for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Isabel Carmody, and her latest book is The Sending. It is book 6 of the Ober Newton Chronicles. It's just been published by Penguin.